My name is Marvin L. Storm. I'm the host of the Business Exit Stories podcast. This is the second episode in the three-part series on learning a little bit about my backstory and my education, my early career as an entrepreneur, and how I came to the point of thinking that developing a podcast about business exit stories was a good idea, and a little bit about what I hope to accomplish with this podcast. Well, last time we talked a little bit about my family history, a little bit about my ancestry, how my grandfather had left home as a young man, 15, 16 years old, and became a cowhand, I guess is the best word for it, and how this led to an injury that he broke his leg and ended up marrying my grandmother, and how they started their ranch in the middle of really nowhere in northwestern South Dakota. Talked a little bit about how my dad started his businesses and just how I went through high school, and where high school was not a top priority for me. I managed to get through high school. I certainly wasn't an exemplary student by any stretch of the imagination. The opportunity for me to go to college was something that was a pivotal decision in my life and was brought about by a series of events that were a little unusual given my background and lack of religious training. I was introduced to a church, and through that church affiliation, I was introduced to a school, and through that school affiliation led me to go off to leave home after graduating from high school and starting a college career, which relatively few people in our high school actually did. Being from a small community at that time, my guess is maybe a dozen out of 116 people that were in my graduating class, maybe 10 to 15 of those students actually left town and went off to college. So it wasn't a normal thing to do, and especially someone that didn't have the academic credentials that most of the kids that went off to school had. Mine was a little bit of an unusual situation. As I mentioned, my stepmom never graduated from high school. My dad went to a one-room schoolhouse. I remember visiting the ranch homestead when I was an adult. And as I talked to people that lived in that area, some of them knew, or their parents knew of my grandfather and shared a few stories that they remember. One of the things that was evident that my grandfather, whose name was Lincoln Lauderdale Storm, he was known as Link. He was a respected man. He was considered honest, and he was successful. And in fact, the school that my dad went to was called the Storm School. And it was known for the Storm. My dad was a major sponsor. My grandfather was a major sponsor for that school. And was responsible, I guess, for paying a substantial portion of the teacher's salary. And so my dad went to that one-room school, as did my cousin, who I mentioned in the last episode. It was a school building. I actually saw the school. It had been purchased by another local rancher at the time and had been moved from its original location of where the school existed for decades, and was moved onto his ranch and became a storage shed for him. But I remember walking into the school, and blackboards were still on the wall. The stove was over in the corner. The building was probably 25 feet wide, maybe 30 feet wide, probably 50 to 60 feet long. So it wasn't a big building. It was a wood frame building, fairly well built. It was still holding up, probably 100 years old. Even after being moved, it was still pretty good shape. But I remember looking at this and kind of visualizing several dozen kids and a school teacher in the school sitting out there on the plains of South Dakota, and during the winter and in the spring and in the fall. And as we all know, you know, our agricultural heritage in this country is the reason we have the type of school schedule that we have, is because the kids were let out in the summer to go work on the ranch or the farm. And that's why we have kind of the summer vacations that we have now. It wasn't really vacation back then. It was kids got out of school to go to work and work on the ranch and work on farms. that was the case with my family and growing up in the Storm School. As I said, that college was never really talked about in my home, but I did eventually end up, amazingly enough, none of my brothers went to college. Only a couple of my friends went off to college, but most everybody else stayed in town or left town. But I was one that actually went off to college. The reason that I'm talking about this is because back in the time of my making this decision to go to college was in the Vietnam War era. And for those of you who might not be familiar with that, there was the military draft. And if you didn't go to college and have a college deferment, you were drafted. And towards the end of the draft, just virtually anyone that wasn't in college was drafted into the Army. And a number of young men were drafted into the Army from the high school that I went to, and some of them never made it back. Hundreds of thousands served their countries, and 50,000 never came home. If they did come home, it was not standing. They were brought home in coffins. There were several in our high school that happened to. So my dad was very concerned that I not get drafted into the military. He didn't think I should avoid the military. He just didn't want me being drafted and marching through the jungles of Vietnam. He wanted me to join the Navy. In fact, he told me that that's what he wanted me to do. So his plan, even though he wanted me to have a better life than him and to get an education, at the time, first and foremost in his mind, was not having me in the Army in Vietnam fighting in the jungles against the Viet Cong at that time. And he wanted me to join the Navy. Well, when I showed up and told him that I had been accepted to college, he had no faith that I would be able to succeed at college and that I would end up getting drafted and end up in the Army. And so he was adamantly opposed for me to go off to college because he didn't have any faith that I would be able to succeed at college because I had done nothing in high school to demonstrate or give anyone confidence that I was going to be able to survive college when I barely got out of high school. I had no study habits. I had no good grades at the time. It was open enrollment for the little junior college that I went to, so I was able to get in fairly easily. So he told me that I should go to the Navy. But I insisted that I wanted to go to college based on this epiphany-like experience that I had, that I absolutely knew that I needed to go to college. And so he made a deal with me. He said that he would pay for my college for the first semester if I got a B average. And I'm sure he thought that was a pretty safe bet. And off to college I went, scared to death. I realized the bet that I had made or the agreement that I had made with my father was going to be a real challenge. And so when I got to school, I jumped in with both feet. I had never really studied through my whole educational life, certainly not in high school, my high school years. And I really applied myself. In fact, since I had worked so hard in high school, always having a job, and sometimes two, working on weekends, working at night, when I got to college, I just took on the attitude that this was my job. You know, my second job was school. And so I studied during the day. I studied at night. I studied on weekends. And for the first time, I started to see the results of my studying. Lo and behold, I started to get some reasonably good grades, something that I had never gotten in high school. In fact, I can remember the first A I got on an exam. Maybe I got an A or two during high school on exams, certainly not in any grades other than gym. I played sports in high school, and I was pretty athletic, but I never got A's or B's. That was by far the exception. But I started to get these, you know, A's and B's in classes. Well, that had such a euphoric effect on me. It was just adrenaline rush. These endorphins were firing off in my head. This is great. And I had never really experienced the satisfaction or the joy of succeeding academically at something. I didn't think I had that ability. In fact, I considered myself to be subpar in the intellectual department. So when I started getting some good grades, this really fueled my ambition. When I came home after my first semester, no one was more surprised than myself of getting a B+ average. Now, granted, the courses I were taking were all entry-level courses. I was not taking any upper-level, you know, courses in college. I was not in a college prep, advanced English, or advanced math classes. I was taking all the basic classes, the 101 level classes in college, and yet some of those were fairly challenging because they were in subjects I had no background in, chemistry and calculus and biology, and some of those classes were way beyond what my academic abilities were at that time, and I struggled in some of those classes, but the harder I struggled, the harder I worked. After the first year in college, I mean, I went off that first semester, I came home, and I can remember going to some parties for my old classmates that were getting together, some of them who had come back from college and others that had stayed in town. We were getting together, talking and partying over the Christmas holidays. And I would mention that I'd gone to college, and they were all somewhat suspicious of that, knowing my history. And when I told them I, you know, got the grades that I got, I'm sure they thought that I was really puffing that a lot. And I was super excited. My confidence level, my self-image had started to improve. I really felt more positive. I started thinking about what I was going to do, what I was going to major in. I can remember one of the things, if you remember back, for those of you who've been to college, you know, what are you majoring in? Well, I didn't have a good answer for that. And so I was talking to somebody that was an upperclassman, and he said he was an industrial psychology major. And he was going to have a clinical psychology orientation in industrial psychology. And I thought that was pretty snazzy. It sounded good to me. And so I enrolled second semester in a psychology class, and I declared that I was going to be an industrial psychologist with a clinical component to that. And that I didn't know exactly what the clinical orientation would be, but that's what I was going to be. I had convinced myself that was going to be my career. Had no idea really what it was about. But I signed up for my first psychology class that I'd taken in my life, and I really enjoyed it. And for the first year, I thought that's kind of what I was going to be doing. So I completed my first year, came back from school to go back to work in the gas station in my little hometown. I had decided that I was now going to go on to a major four-year university, which was rather challenging to get into. But I'd had a good, you know, first-year academic record. And I applied to Brigham Young University and was accepted. And so I was excited about my future. Well, for those of you who know that in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the LDS faith, Mormon Church, young men are asked to go on missions. And a missionary service is generally for 2 years. You go to various parts of the country and world and talk to others about your faith. And so I was asked to do that. I was asked to consider that. And because I had had this complete reorientation in my life, number one, through all high school, I didn't go to church very much. Although I was committed to the church, I lived the standards of the church for the most part, and I had gone to a church school, I had really no interest in serving a mission because of my new found enthusiasm for education, quite frankly, which was entirely new to me. So I flatly turned it down, and so I was asked several times more, and each time my answer was the same. Nope, I'm going to school. And in fact, when I talked to my dad about it one time, and since I'd had quite a bit of success in now my academic life, he said, don't worry about that, you know, just get your education if you want to do that after you get your schooling out of the way, fine, but you know, you get your education now. But that's just what I was going to do. Well, you know, sometimes the guy upstairs has a different plan for our lives than we do. As I continually turned down the idea of becoming a missionary and taking a couple of years off of my educational pursuits at this point in time, I started to make plans to go back to school my second year and to focus on that. I'd made my housing arrangements. I'd made my travel arrangements. And then finally, I had one of those other life-changing experiences where I had that confirmation, you know, that sort of epiphany, some would maybe call it a revelation or whatever, you know, that this is something I needed to do. And so very, very reluctantly did I decide that that's kind of what I needed to do. So I that was the path I decided to pursue. Well, lo and behold, I was planning on, you know, taking 2 years. And when the actual assignment came for where I would be called to serve as a missionary for my church, it was to Africa, speaking another language. And when you went to a foreign speaking language at that point in time, it was not 2 years, but it was 2.5 years. And because of the way the school years fell, I was going to be out of school for 3 full years. Well, I had made the commitment, I accepted the call, and so for the next 3 years, that became my life. I spent 2.5 years in Southern Africa. I was all over Southern Africa, from South Africa to Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Botswana, Malawi, what is now Namibia, all over South Africa. I was able to travel, to serve, see an entirely different world, to experience entirely different cultures. And it gave me a newfound appreciation for this country, a newfound appreciation for the bountiful blessings that we have in this country. When you visit third world countries and you see people who have little to nothing in their lives, and yet they're happy and they don't feel like they've been shortchanged, and you know, they live their lives that are full of meaning. It was again, one of those experiences that permanently altered my thought process and my value system. Well, I returned to school, enrolled, and began becoming an industrial psychologist. That was my orientation. But something else was going on in my life at this point in time. I had my real entrepreneurial tendencies. I think that really came from my upbringing, started to reemerge at this time. And I started thinking about the business, or really no reason for it. I often think back, you know, why did I never really thought about it? You know, our whole education system is really geared to getting a job. You know, you go to school to learn, to get a degree, and that degree will make you valuable to companies who will hire you and pay you a salary. And our whole educational system is really set up, you know, on that type of format. And that was the format that I was following to the T. I was looking to get a degree. I was looking with that degree to go get a job. And that job was going to provide me a living and a career that would be able to provide a lifestyle for myself and my family. And that was my orientation. But all of a sudden, I come back from my missionary experience, and I enroll in class, and I enroll in my psychology classes. I took, you know, now some mid-level psychology classes along this major. But yet, I'm thinking all the time about business opportunities and entrepreneurial ventures. The first real entrepreneurial venture I had was that in order to fulfill a general requirement, I took an economics class, Economics 101. And these, you know, entry-level classes tend to be large classes. You know, this class had probably 300-plus students in it. It was held in this huge amphitheater-like classroom that had the tiered seating, and the professor who I had at the time would lecture. His teaching style was lecturing from the manual, from the book. And he told us that our grade for the semester was going to be based on three things. It was going to be based on our midterm exams, our final exam, and exams on three books outside of the classroom book that were assigned, and that we would be tested on these three books that he had assigned at the beginning of the semester, and that we would be tested on at the end of the semester. And so three components to our grades. Well, this was a little unusual. I'd never had a class like that where your grades were so narrowly defined and how you did on, you know, three different components of a grade, you know, midterm, a final, and testing on three books that were thick. lengthy books. Don't even remember what the books were at this point in time, but they were long economics-oriented books. And so I had my same attitude I had as a freshman in college. My second job was my school. And so I had saved enough money over the summer. You know, I came back at the beginning of summer from my missionary services, and I worked hard over the whole summer to get enough money together to go to college. And I did take out a student loan later to complete my education. But I had saved, you know, enough money, so I wasn't working, you know, after school. And so my second job was school. And I worked really hard, and, you know, I followed the same pattern. You know, I studied between classes and after school and on weekends. I was getting the results, getting good grades, and I felt good about everything. And as I was taking this economics class and getting toward mid-semester, I got an A on the midterm. I remember that. We were tested on one of the books at the midterm. And I had read the book, and but most other kids had not read the book. And by the time we got to the final, no one or very few of the people in the class had read most of those books. But I had read them all and outlined them, and I had this idea. Since no one was reading these books and I had read them and outlined them, I will sell my outlines to them as a study guide. And so I went to the administration building. Back then, they were just big binders of computer printouts with the list of students and the classes they were taking. And I copied manually down every student in the class and their mailing address. And I printed up some flyers that went something like, you know, a student in this Economics 101 class has these outlines for sale. They're $5 a piece, or all three of them for $10. Send your money here. And that I would mail them back the outlines. And that was my business model. That was my plan. And so a few weeks before the end of the semester, I printed up these flyers, stuffed the envelopes, mailed out all of these letters to all the students in the class. And I was buried with responses. I was really excited. Getting $10 checks and $10 bills in the mail just was really, really exciting. And I walked into class. Class started. The professor got up and he waved over his head, "Who sent out this flyer?" And I said, "Oh, no." What have I done? He's going to kick me out of class. You know, this was illegal. I shouldn't have done it. How stupid am I? You know, and I raised my hand and he said, "You come down here." And he asked me my name and put his arm on my shoulders and says, "Well, I don't know if this outline that you're selling is going to help anybody, but it certainly can hurt. And if you haven't read, you know, the books, I don't know how much it's going to help you, but anyone that wants to get it and think that'll help, here's your guy." And I was stood by him with his arm on my shoulders. And after class, I was just deluged with people shoving money at me for these outlines. And I sold out everything that I had printed. You know, I had printed up like 150 or so, and I sold them all out. And so I can remember stuffing money in my pocket in class and everything. It was very exciting. And then I went and printed up a bunch more. And kids would come up to me. They'd see me on campus, or they'd come up to me in class because we had a couple more classes before the final. I had like 50 of these left. So on the last day of class, I went down to the teacher and said, "Hey, look, I reprinted, you know, all of these. I have 50 left. Could I make an announcement that I'm having a closeout sale?" He said, "Sure, you know, great place to do this in an economics class, you know, where you have supply and demand. The very basic premise of economics is, you know, supply and demand." And so I got up and said that I had, you know, all of these extra outlines, and I was selling them for all three of them for $5. And, you know, to close them out. And I can remember, again, being overrun and deluged, and, you know, people grabbing them. And I not everyone got them. And there were some very unhappy students that didn't get an outline. And there were some very unhappy students that had paid $10 for the outlines, and I was selling them for $5. but that's how supply and demand works. That was my first entrepreneurial experience. And based on that experience and the rush that I got from that experience, my mind went into hyperdrive. I started thinking about all sorts of types of businesses to get involved in. And my affinity for this psychology major, industrial psychologist, faded very quickly. So my second semester, I enrolled in the business college and started taking business classes. My next one of my next ventures that fall was I had a donut remarketing business. I figured I loved donuts. So I went and made an arrangement with a local donut shop, and I bought wholesale donuts. And on Saturday mornings, I went around and knocked on local residents' doors in the more affluent part of town and sold dozens of donuts, And then I sold them out. And so the next week, I hired some other students to sell donuts, and I split the profits with them. They would buy the donuts from me. With 50% markup, and they sold them for 100%. And so I was buying them wholesale with a markup. I sold it to my distributor. My distributor sold them retail. And this was a really good business. No inventory. I didn't have to have any equipment. I was just, kind of a distributor, a master distributor with his own distributors of selling donuts. But, that part of the world gets cold. When the winter, November rolled around, so I shut the business down. I wasn't about to go walking when it was 10 below zero out and knocking on doors selling donuts. So I stopped that business, and it was that next spring that I launched my next business, and that was a t-shirt business. Now, this was driven by an opportunity. It was sort of opportunistic. It was driven by the fact that Richard Nixon, at the time, was resigning, and they had the Academy Awards. And the Academy Awards at that time, Peter Sellers, you may or may not remember him, of Pink Panther fame, I think is his claim to fame. He was hosting the Academy Awards, and as he was hosting, a guy ran across the stage naked, and that was called streaking. And that was a big rage at the time. And so I developed a t-shirt of the U.S. streaking team, and it had a picture of Richard Nixon on it, kind of naked, with a big head, the U.S. streaking team. And I went to other colleges, and I sold those t-shirts out. Thought of other t-shirts that I could print and market, but that was sidelined by my next business, which was called the Pop-In Maid Service. I had moved in my second semester of my sophomore year, into a brand new off-campus apartment complex, a large apartment complex, hundreds of apartments. And they were brand new. And the six guys to an apartment. And I noticed very quickly that, having lived in the dorms before, you sort of cleaned up your own place, but you were living with another guy at the time, at least in the dorms. That was the dorm format that I lived in. And I noticed that these guys were not great housekeepers, so I incubated the idea that I would clean their apartments. And so my business model was I went around and knocked on doors and sold the service that you would have a maid come in 1 hour a week and clean your apartment. And it would only cost everyone in the apartment $1 a week. Six guys, $6. Four times a month, $24 a month. How that revenue broke down is that I would pay the maids a third of that. And you have to remember, this was decades ago, and the minimum wage back that time was less than $2. So I was paying $2 to clean an apartment for an hour. That was really good wages back then. And I then hired very good-looking co-eds to go around and knock on doors and sell. And they got $2 for selling the apartment. And so it was a good deal for the co-eds, it was a good deal for the maids, and it was a good deal for the guys. And so I made $2, the maids made $2, the co-eds made $2, and the guys paid $6 to have their apartments clean once a week. Well, I have to tell you that was an idea whose time had come, because those co-eds were getting $2 for all those apartments, were selling dozens of apartments a week. I almost had to drop out of school because I had so much going on. I was scheduling over 100 apartments to be cleaned every week. I had to shut down the marketing of the, I couldn't keep up. I was buying, vacuum cleaners and cleaning supplies. And, I was cashing checks. Guys weren't paying. Checks were being returned of insufficient funds. Maids would get sick and not show up. And I had all the headaches that any business has. And I was really being challenged. And the reason I took my first accounting class was because I had so much money, thousands of dollars flowing through my little new business here. And I was losing control of my finances. And so I took my first accounting class to help me with that. But I didn't even, it was before long that I had literally was considering dropping out of school to run this business. Now, I've often thought maybe I should have. Maybe I should have been a college dropout and managed this business, because today there are several, three or four franchise concepts, companies out there that have thousands of locations around the country that do maid services. In fact, one of the things I hadn't planned on was local residences. Homeowners in the area were calling me up saying they heard that I had this maid service and they wanted me to come and clean their homes. And it just got too much to me. I probably should have continued with it, but I didn't. I decided that my education was more important, and so I sold it to several of the maids that I had that picked up the contracts and continued to clean the apartments. And I moved on and with my education. So that was how I got into my major, actually. I was a business major, and I got an internship. Since I had taken an accounting class, the accounting school at Brigham Young University has a very top-flight accounting school, one of the top half dozen in the country, and it was a challenging courses that I took. I decided to apply for an internship, and I got an internship with Deloitte Touche in Chicago. And so off I went on this internship, and I had planned on getting an MBA. That was my career path. But during this internship, all the CPAs told me that MBA was worthless and that I needed to get my CPA. And they talked me out of, getting an MBA and said I should be an accountant instead. And of course, being young and impressionable, that's exactly what I did. I graduated and accepted a position with Deloitte at the time, and didn't pursue my MBA at that time. So I went to Chicago on my internship. I was offered a position there. My wife had met a young lady. We dated, got married. She was from California. So instead of accepting the position in California, I applied for a position with Deloitte in California, came to the San Francisco Bay Area, and began my career in the San Francisco area. While playing basketball, I played basketball in high school. I met a very good friend there, and we became real pals. And before long, we were then thinking about entrepreneurial pursuits, and one thing led to another. And so I left the accounting world, and we got involved in the equipment leasing business at the time. And this was one of those situations that I was in the right place at the right time with the right guy and the right partner. And we did extraordinarily well for a period of years. We just happened, as I said, to be at the right place, and the business grew. I went almost 9 months without any income, leaving a steady 2-week paycheck to no income with a wife and a newborn at the time. And I worked hard during that first year or two in business, but the hard work paid off. And I can remember after we had been in business for a number of years, a lot of our business came in the last quarter of the year. And we were writing down 2-3 days before the year end closed out. And we had had a very successful year, very successful quarter. We had leased an entire floor in an office building in downtown Oakland, California. We had nearly 70 people working for us at the time. It was heady times. And being young and, standing at the plate the first time and hitting a ball over the fence, you begin to believe that you're the reason for the ball, you're the reason for the bat, and you're the reason that you were able to hit that ball over the fence. And you don't have any appreciation for the other factors that are involved that are outside of your control. and that a large part of your success are external factors that you have little influence over. And that was really the situation that my partner and I found ourselves in. And I can remember, you know, taking the elevator down before going home at the end of the year to take a week or so off before the new year rolled in. We had, and what in today's dollars would probably be in the neighborhood of a couple of $1 million in the bank in cold hard cash. And we thought, well, maybe we should just take our chips and go home and maybe do something else, you know. But, you know, we were so cocky and so confident that we just put our bets down in the next year. And whether that was a good decision or a bad decision, I don't know. Our business continued to flourish for a number of years, but as the world changes, the tax laws change, the market changed, it became much more competitive. But most of all, our goals and objectives change. When we first went into business with each other, we had the family size was about the same. We were roughly the same age. Our goals were the same. But over a 10-year period of time in business together, our goals and objectives change. And we finally decided that it was time for us to go our separate ways. And we did. I had done a number of leasing deals with franchise companies. And as I thought what direction I should head off into as our partnership wound down, I really thought, well, this franchising really seems interesting. And so I decided to do that. And that's what we'll talk about in our next and final episode of Getting to Know Me. So what I'd like to kind of leave with you at this point in time, some of the takeaways from my initial forays into entrepreneurship. You know, a lot of what we become is really from our earlier experiences in life. And there are those fork in the road decisions that really determine the kind of what direction we head off. And I had several of those in my life. What I learned is that, in my business career anyway, is that you don't always know how things are going to end. You just do it. As the old Nike slogan was, just do it. I learned that most of my entrepreneurial success is just by not knowing how it's going to end up, or that I had a absolute clear vision of how this business concept and model would roll out. I just rolled up my sleeves and just got to work and did it. And also that there are things that are totally outside of our control. And I can't stress this enough. My initial business success, which was really a home run hit, was a large part due to things that were in the general economy. We were, you know, as I've often said, the wave came through the economy, and in the little niche that we were in, I happened to have a surfboard. I happened to be on the ocean. I was smart enough to get up on my surfboard and ride that wave. And that was a lot of my success was things beyond my control. Now, I did have the surfboard and I did have the skill to ride that. I'll give myself credit for that. But sometimes, both good and bad, sometimes we're successful not because we're so smart, but because of other outside things that we don't control. As well as, you know, sometimes we fail because of things outside of our own control, and we can't be too hard on ourselves when those things happen. You know, entrepreneurship and business ownership is not about perfection, but it's about learning. And that's kind of what I'd like to leave with you at this point in time. And next time, we're going to talk a little bit about what brought me to the podcast and, you know, this initial success and my other business ventures, which led into me starting and buying some companies and exiting those companies, that brought me to really the desire to start this Business Exit Stories podcast, and what I hope to pass accomplishes for those that who take the time to listen to it and subscribe to it. So until next time, this is Marvin L. Storm of the Business Exit Stories podcast, and I'll see you on our next episode.